O God, whose word is life, give us faith like that of the woman who refused to remain an outsider, so that we too may have the wit to argue and demand that our children be made whole. In the name of God, who creates, who forgives. I must confess, this is one of those gospel sections that I have long had more than a little trouble with over the years. I think what gives me greatest pause is seeing such a rough edge to Jesus. He actually seems to be going out of his way to be intentionally insulting to a woman who has come to him for help. For a long time, I have never been quite sure what to make of all of this. Our reading begins this morning by informing us Jesus and presumably his disciples set out and went away to the region of Tyre in what is now Lebanon. They have therefore moved into Gentile country. The text makes very clear that this is not a mission trip, for he entered a house and did not want anyone to know he was there. Jesus has been quite busy up until now. In the two chapters preceding our reading today, Jesus has taught and preached, cast out demons, healed many, been rejected by his hometown, received news of the death of his cousin, John the Baptist, miraculously fed over 5,000 people, and walked on the water of the Sea of Galilee. All along the way, Jesus has attracted huge crowds, which have doggedly pursued him, even when he has tried to get away for a little private time for prayer and rest. It seems even the Savior of the world needs a little R&R now and again. So they had escaped to an out-of-the-way place, away from the crowds filled with messianic fervor and clamoring for miracles and signs, hopefully to rest in an anonymity for a few days. But even here in Gentile country, Jesus' reputation has preceded him. No sooner had they arrived than immediately there's a woman at the door throwing herself at Jesus' feet and begging to heal her daughter of a demon. She is Syrophoenician, a woman, a Gentile, to Jesus, a foreigner. She is violating many societal customs and norms to be approaching Jesus so brazenly, but her love and concern for her daughter compel her to do so. She has heard of this Jewish rabbi and the miracles he is reported to have done, and she is sure that he can heal her daughter. If so, any risk is acceptable to her. Her certainty stands in sharp contrast to the Jewish crowds Jesus has taught, particularly in his hometown, where he could accomplish little due to their unbelief. Her certainty especially casts a stark light on the persistent inability of the disciples themselves to fully grasp what Jesus is teaching them. At this point, we almost expect Jesus to respond as he has to others. Go, your faith has made you well. Jesus' response catches us all off guard. Let the children be fed first, for it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dog. It is breathtaking in its coarseness and its insult. Some scholars have sought to soften its edge by pointing out the word Greek used for dogs is in the diminutive form, the English equivalent of puppies. But the reality is, dog, dog. And the term is, and is intended to be, an insult. Jesus, it seems, is underscoring in no uncertain terms his ministry is for the chosen children of God, and those are who. Many would feel the sting of such a response and cower away in humiliation and rejection. But the Syrophoenician woman is of much stronger motivation and will soon show herself to be more quick-witted than most and of equally sharp tongue as the rabbi. Sir, she immediately responds, even the dogs under the table eat. A variation of this very line is incorporated in the right one prayer of humble access recited immediately before receiving communion. we are worthy. We are not worthy so much as to gather up the crumbs under thy table. Her retort acknowledges Jesus' calling to the children of Israel, but using his own metaphor in response reminds him that if the dogs are under your table gathering crumbs, they are your dogs, and therefore not strangers, but members of your own family. In this simple sentence, she reverses the prejudices simmering on both sides of the encounter. Jesus, the rabbi who teaches in parables, is usually the one who is able to silence the crowd with a single statement. Now he recognizes the simplicity, the beauty, and the truth in what this unnamed Gentile woman told him. Without further fuss, Jesus heals her daughter. Unlike the telling of this story in Matthew, where Jesus responds, as we might expect, by citing the woman's great faith as the basis of the healing, in Mark, Jesus simply tells her, "For saying that, you may go. The demon has left her." Which leads me directly to another issue I have long had with this reading. Did this woman actually change Jesus' mind about his ministry? Would that have even been possible? Could Jesus' understanding of his ministry really be so narrow defined? Our images of Jesus are too often formed by Hollywood epics and biblical spectacles that usually portray a blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jesus, immaculately dressed, perfectly coiffed, artfully backlit, with restrained strings on the delicate crescendo as he walks by. I'm thinking that's not what this homeless itinerant Jewish peasant preacher and teacher really looked like at all. Our creeds tell us we believe Jesus to have been fully divine, yes, of course, but fully human as well. What I have come to understand, at least to this point anyway, is that I think in our reading this morning we are seeing Jesus in a very human moment of weakness. Recall that Mark was the first gospel written and gives us a Jesus who is often on a much more human scale than the later gospels. We are told at the outset Jesus went away and did not want to be bothered. I infer that he was, in a very human way, simply exhausted and needed a little downtime. And before he could even sit down and put up his feet, here comes one more person asking something. In his drained and fatigued state, the human side of him reacted. I'm sure we have all been there at one time or another. I know I have certainly been there more than once. It is all too easy to shoot from the lip and ask questions later, and often on reflection, we certainly wish we could take back a few of those hastily. For Jesus not to have experienced similar moments would have detracted from his full humanity. In this sense, the Syrophoenician woman's response serves to help Jesus focus on just what his mission and ministry were truly about. She helped him to open up again to the power and love of God, and to once again embrace the breath of God's love for all of God is revealed once again as dynamic, responsive, compassionate, and above all, present. The second healing this morning that immediately follows involves a deaf mute brought to Jesus by his friends. And Jesus heals him by looking to heaven and saying in Aramaic, "Ephatha," which means "be opened." It's a call to all of us. Ephatha, be opened. Be opened to the love of God for each and every one of us. Be open to the presence and work of God both in our lives and in the lives of those around us. In our very human natures, our fatigue, our angers, our confusions, our fears, be open to the spark of the divine in each of us. Be open to the love and compassion of God for each of us, that we may be empowered to share the same.